From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much. We got a great show for you today. It's Halloween weekend, so we'll be talking zombies with legendary movie director George Romero. He'll be here. How to recognize zombies, how to defend against them, since this is public radio, how to try to reason with them and come to mutual understanding and respect. We'll call them zombie Americans. But also in honor of Halloween, today in our theater we are dressed up as our favorite news stories. I am dressed as Sarah Palin's upcoming book. I'm wearing a nice jacket, but I won't be making any sense. And Carl, as the audience here is thrilled to note, came as Levi Johnston.
A little cold in here, right?
Yeah, it sure is, Carl. We just want you, just as you are, though. Give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Gwen Marion from Pinckney, Michigan.
Hey, Gwen, how are you?
Good. How are you, Peter?
I'm fine. Where's Pinckney?
It's kind of near Ann Arbor.
What do you do there?
I'm a copy editor. I work from home.
You work from home. Do you find that a little distracting? It's hard to work from home sometimes.
Yeah, especially with a two-year-old.
Oh, my God. So how do you in the world do you get anything done?
I really couldn't tell you. I get a little bit of help here and there, but, other than that, I just try to be patient.
Well, the two-year-old does some of the copy editing, too.
That's true.
That was the worst issue of Better Homes and Garden I've ever read.
I'm sorry. I'll talk to you about that.
Well, welcome to the show, Gwen. Let me introduce you to our panel. First, you know her from Saturday Night Live and her monologues, God Said Ha and Letting Go of God. Ms. Julia Sweeney is here. Also, say hello to the woman behind the advice column, Ask Amy, the author of the memoir, The Mighty Queens of Freeville, Ms. Amy Dickinson.
Hey, Gwen.
Hi.
And we are very happy to welcome back to our show the host of the Too Beautiful to Live podcast, Mr. Luke Burbank.
Hiya, Gwen.
Hi there.
Gwen, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. If you do that, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Okay, I'm ready.
You sound... I don't know how to put this. Reluctant.
I'm a little nervous.
A little nervous, okay. All right, well, that's all right. We'll help you through it. Here is your first quote.
Nancy Pelosi, you'll burn in hell for this.
That was Mr. Pelosi. No, I joke. That was actually a protester at the Capitol on Thursday. Speaker Pelosi runs the risk of hellfire for introducing what?
The new health care program?
Exactly, this House health care bill. It was an interesting week in the continuing health care reform drama. First, earlier in the week, Senate Leader Harry Reid introduced his bill, which had a public option in it. Observers could not have been more stunned if he had shown up to introduce his fiancée, Angelina Jolie. Then, a few days later, Speaker Pelosi introduced the House plan. The rules there allow her to do what she wants, which explains the robust public option, the expanded regulatory powers, and the subsidy for machinery to help bend her face into a smile. So liberals were really happy with all this. But then Senator Joseph Lieberman entered the debate, which is the same kind of buzzkill as your mother joining Facebook. Oh, here he comes. He said he would filibuster the bill, in effect putting on a homemade Santa suit and coming down from Mount Crumpet to steal the public option while Senator Schumer slept in his bed.
I don't know why nobody's talking about the public enemy option. Right. Which is to just literally have the rap group Public Enemy do all the medical diagnosis. I mean, Flavor Flav is...
Yeah, that's true.
Crazy like a fox.
I know. All right, here's your next quote.
All I'm saying is, we were not asleep.
That was Richard Cole. He is now one of the two most famous airline pilots in America after he and his co-pilot managed to do what on their Northwest airliner?
Oh, they lost track of time.
Oh, yeah, they did that. And what happened?
kind of overshot things a little
bit. Oh, they kind of did, yeah, a little bit. Northwest forgot to tell the passengers on flight 188 to Minneapolis that they're now charging $20 to check a bag and a $39 landing fee. The story of the plane that kept going has transfixed the nation. The pilots have offered a buffet of excuses as to why they flew right by Minneapolis and never answered increasingly concerned radio calls. Now they say they were both really involved with their laptops. Here's the irony. They were playing Flight Simulator.
I just think it pulls back the veil on this scary thing, which is getting in basically a tin can with a bunch of people with swine flu and hurtling towards the sun, which is how I understand flying.
That's how
basically
it works.
And even though these planes, they have this term fly-by-wire, which means they could theoretically, the new ones, could take off, fly, and land by remote control of some sort. I mean, the pilots could, I mean, they could be doing Sudoku in there. They could be, they could have a tanning bed. I mean, they could really probably do anything. But I don't need to be reminded of how sort of checked out they are. And I think that's why this story was getting so much play this week, because it made me think about something that I don't want to think about, which is my own death.
Wow, you went right there. Turns out, however, the whole thing was a complete hoax. The two pilots weren't even in the plane. They were in Richard Heaney's attic the whole time. All right, here is your last quote.
It was all on the line on the 18th hole, and I made a clutch putt, and now I'm $10 richer.
That was a woman named Melody Barnes. She was bragging a bit. She is, according to reports, the first woman to play golf with whom?
Oh, boy. I have no idea.
Well, she is a White House aide.
Oh, with President Obama?
Yes, with President Obama. Last week, the New York Times writes one of those tisk-tisk stories about how the supposedly sensitive and woman-friendly president of these United States never invites women to his regular pickup basketball or golf games. So he made up for it just this weekend. This last weekend, Ms. Barnes was invited to play. The last president to invite a woman into a foursome was John F. Kennedy, but he was not playing golf. So this is historical.
Wow.
Was it tetherball? Oh, it was really different.
Yes.
It's embarrassing that he did it so quickly. Like, why? It's, you know, they criticized him. He should wait a week, act like it's his own idea.
Yeah. Carl, how did Gwen do?
Perfect, Peter. 3 correct answers, so Gwen, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations. Thank you, Gwen.
Thank you so much.
She's a lady. Oh, 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 she's a lady. Talking about that little lady. And the lady is mine.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Luke, this week, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger sent a letter to a California Assembly Democrats vetoing a bill they had sponsored. That's not unusual. The unusual thing was that the veto message did what?
It sent a not very subtle message.
Yes. How did it do that?
It spelled out the F word.
It did. It did. The note begins with an F for some time now, and the next line going down begins with a U and so on until the first column spells out something rather aggressively insulting. The governor's office denied that this message down the left-hand margin was intentional. They say, I am not kidding, it's just a coincidence. Quote, we looked at other veto messages and saw the left margins spelled things like soap and ear. Weird, unquote. And then, of course, there was the proclamation that spelled out, I shall crush you like a bug, you pansy boy insects.
Yeah, all things considered, interviewed a cryptologist at like a community college in Maryland to ask him about the likelihood of that, which would probably is the best day ever if you're a cryptologist at a community college in Maryland. You're like, thank you, Herr Schwarzenegger.
Really? Luke, Mattel has announced the latest in their long line of Barbie dolls. It's a new version of Barbie's boyfriend, and it's called what?
Of all the websites I didn't check this week, BarbieNews.tv. It's a male doll?
Yes.
It's like a boyfriend of hers?
Yes.
Okay, is his name Ken?
It is.
So he's a kind of Ken.
He's a kind of Ken. Well, I'll give you a hint. Presumably it goes with kept woman Barbie.
Friend with benefit Ken?
No. Do you know what it is? It's a Palm Beach sugar daddy Ken.
Oh, my God.
For real?
This Barbie boy toy comes with a lime green spangly jacket, white pants, and a golf club. And according to the spokesman for Mattel, quote, exemplifies fantastic Palm Beach fashion.
Can't they just call him gay Ken?
No.
Didn't the Barbie Bernie Madoff lose all of Bernie Palm Beach Ken money?
He's thriving, baby. The tragic thing is sugar daddy Ken is constantly tossing Barbie aside and dating younger and younger dolls. Eventually, he's going to end up in the Cabbage Patch, you know? No. Thank you, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Dina from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C.
Hey, how are things in Washington?
Pretty good. Pretty interesting.
Well, what do you do there?
I am a freelance writer, political strategist, and an amateur baker.
You're a freelance political strategist?
Yes.
So anybody who needs advice, you sort of wander in like the lone gunman and...
I do, and then I bake them a cake to make them like me.
How nice. Well, welcome to our show, Dina. You're going to play the game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Dina's topic?
At last, it's just what I've always wanted.
What could be better than that look in a child's face when she opens her present and sitting before her is the one thing she's always wanted? Never mind that 10 minutes later she's playing with the box. This week, we read about someone getting what their heart has longed for and the consequences that followed. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about dreams come true. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or your voicemail if you like. Ready to play?
I am ready. Let's do it.
First, let's hear from Luke Burbank.
As the old saying goes, with great power comes great responsibility. And with great amounts of ill-gotten cash comes the bizarre enslavement of Kenny Rogers. Enter Raj Rajaratnam, the hedge fund manager accused of masterminding one of the biggest insider trading schemes of all time. According to reports, Raj seemed to possess an almost preternatural sense for when to hold investments and conversely, when to, you know, fold them. Raj loved that song, The Gambler, so much, in fact, that for one birthday party, he hired the Kenny Rogers to play it over and over and over. No other songs were to be performed. No Lady, no Coward of the County, not even a sliver of Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town. Just The Gambler. The reported price, $4 million, and yet even $4 million, apparently, wasn't enough to turn Kenny Rogers into a human iPod set on repeat. A spokesman for Kenny Rogers vehemently denied the story as ridiculous, maintaining his client performed the song like 4 times, 5 tops.
From Luke Burbank, the story of how a man finally got what he wanted, which was to have Kenny Rogers sing the same song, The Gambler, over and over just for him. Your next story of dreams coming true comes from Amy Dickinson.
Danny Dorff, an eighth grader in New Holland, Michigan, really likes seventh grader Elise Cheney. And Elise really likes marshmallow peeps. So for the last 2 years, Danny has put a package of peeps in Elise's mailbox. Peeps come 3 to a pack, so that's over 2,000 peeps. Elise couldn't eat them fast enough, so she started storing them in the garage. Last week, her father was repairing the garage door with an acetylene torch. The peep stash caught fire, and then when her father tried to stomp out the flame with a broom, he got burning marshmallow on it and spread the fire to other parts of the garage, including his croquet set and 1967 Mustang convertible.
Oh my God.
By the time the fire department came, the garage was a total loss, and the neighborhood smelled like a Girl Scout camp after a s'more orgy. I guess you'd call that a s'morgy. Elise said, my dad talked to the insurance company, and then he talked to Danny's mom, and Danny says he's going to stop. So I told him I really, really like Twinkies.
All the marshmallow peeps you could ever want turns into a disaster. Your last story of a reason not to want the thing you've always wanted comes from Julia Sweeney.
Rhonda Zangwill and Tom Berg of Santa Fe, New Mexico, had a dream to get married on the ice in the Antarctic. Clearances were obtained and everyone flew into McMurdo Station. For the ceremony, they went over the ice to a remote area where the Weddell seals usually congregate. Just as Tom's sister, Sissy, began singing Sunrise, Sunset, an odd choice of song given the 24-hour daylight of the Antarctic summer, a male Weddell seal became aroused and tried to mount a nearby female. The loud groans of the copulating seals attracted the attention of the more than slightly inebriated wedding party, who began to cheer the seals on, jumping up and down and yelling, "Go for it, dude!" Unfortunately, the combined motion of the undulating 1,800-pound seal couple and the excited wedding party caused the ice to crack around them. Angry at being interrupted, the seals began to charge towards the wedding party, who were now trapped on the newly formed iceberg. Rescuers were able to save everyone without injury. Tom took it all in stride, joking that they had really sealed the deal. But Rhonda was incensed that the seals had ruined her dream wedding. "I'm so mad at those seals. In fact, I want a seal fur coat for my first anniversary." Of course, when they get the bill for the rescue, she may have to rethink her latest dream.
All right, let's review your choices. From Luke Burbank, the story of a financier who wanted to hear Kenny Rogers sing The Gambler over and over and did. From Amy Dickinson, the story of a little girl who loved Peeps and the boy who loved her. And from Julia Sweeney, the story of a wedding in Antarctica that ended up floating out to sea. Which of these is the real story of a dream come true?
Oh, I'm going to have to say that it's Julia's story about the wedding and the interesting seal behavior.
You like that?
Yeah.
Have you met a seal?
Do I like that?
Yeah, yes. All right, so you're going to go with Julia's story about the seals in the Arctic. Well, we spoke to the reporter who actually broke this story.
Uh-oh. I got news from a source that Raj had wanted Kenny Rogers to come.
Oh, no!
Oh, yes.
I can't believe that's true.
Well,
Neither can Kenny Rogers.
Yeah. That was Terry Buell. She's a contributing reporter to Deal Breaker, and she's the one who found out about Kenny Rogers performing at the now-indicted financier's party. I'm so sorry, as you have figured it out, Luke had the truth. You, however, have won a point for Julia for winning our little competition. And sadly, you did not win our game, but thank you so much for playing.
Thank you, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You got to know when to hold, when to hold, know when to fold, know when to walk away, and know when to run.
And now the game where we invite on people who know about one thing and ask them about something else. We're very excited to have with us director and zombie expert George Romero. He's the man behind the seminal indie film Night of the Living Dead and its sequels, including Dawn of the Dead. He's also appearing this weekend in Stars Inside Zombieland. George Romero, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So let's establish your bona fides here, as they say.
Okay.
It's 1968, you're a young filmmaker in Pittsburgh, right? And you and your friends decide you want to make a low-budget horror movie. So tell us how you came up with the idea for Night of the Living Dead.
It's kind of a long story. I wanted to do an apocalyptic story about the world being changed by the invasion of some new kind of monster. So I invented the Living Dead, I guess. I didn't call them zombies. They were, I just called them flesh eaters or ghouls.
And right.
It's only when people started writing about the movie that they called them zombies.
Now, the reason is so important, and I think it's massively important, is that prior to your movie, your zombies were, you know, from Caribbean folklore. They were slaves, maybe, but... The whole modern zombie, this shambling, flesh-rotting thing wandering toward you, its arms out going, brains, trying to eat you, that's your work right there.
That was the beginning of it, I guess.
Yeah.
My guys don't talk. They don't say brains, but some of them do. And they don't run. Some of the new films have them running.
Yeah, I understand. I've read interviews where you feel, as the originator of the modern zombie, that they should not be running.
I don't think so. Not if they're dead. I mean, in 28 Days Later...
Yeah.
28 days later, they weren't dead, and I, in Zombieland, they're not dead, so I can sort of forgive them running. But I think if the real Living Dead tried to run, they'd snap their ankle.
All right, now wait a minute.
Oh.
Okay, now this is an interesting question.
But don't you think you're overthinking it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we are talking about undead creatures who rise from their graves to seek out human flesh to eat. Isn't whether or not they can run kind of a quibble on top of that?
I guess so.
Yeah.
But I try to keep a certain logic. My guys don't dig. They're not even strong enough to dig their way out of their grave.
Night of the Living Dead. We've already talked about the tiny budget, and of course, this is long before computer-generated effects. You had. Can you tell us some of the tricks you used to make that movie as scary and as gory as it was?
There are obvious tricks that you can use. A quick movement synchronized with a very loud sound always makes somebody jump, and so those things work. But I think there was a creepiness about that film. I mean, my dead guys were the neighbors.
Right.
And the neighbors are scary enough when they're alive. So.
Right. You've done all kinds of movies in addition to your zombie movies. There was Creepshow, there was Knight Riders, there was the Mr. Rogers tonsillectomy special.
Yeah. My first job was for Mr. Rogers. Everyone in Pittsburgh continues to be a working professional in media of one kind or another got their start from Fred Rogers.
Now, was that before or after you started to make horror movies?
Before.
Oh,
that
really?
That was my first job as a filmmaker. And Fred was good enough to give me that job. He had a little device on the show called Picture Picture. And he would show kids how people made light bulbs and things like that. And one of the things that he wanted to do was show himself going in for a tonsillectomy so that kids wouldn't be afraid.
Right. And so he hired George Romero to make sure they wouldn't be afraid. I love that. And were you inspired? Is that why, for example, I've noticed in some of your early films the zombies stop to change their shoes as they
or appropriate their footwear. Hang their sweaters up, yeah.
Exactly. Like, oh, sweater, cardigan, they say. Well, you have been making zombie movies now for more than 40 years. Do you ever want to do something else? Do you want to do, like, a story in which everybody is alive, for example?
Well, I've done a few of those, but I guess, you know, none of them went out and made enough money for anybody to hire me to do another one, so.
Now, do you ever have difficulty trying to top yourself? I mean, because you're making these zombie movies, and each one more extreme, and, you know, they're extreme, and they're gory, and people's heads get blown off. Do you ever have to say, what am I going to do to shock them this time, and really kind of strain to come up with something particularly vicious?
Well, you know, it's not so much about my, I don't think that my things are particularly vicious, but I do try to come up with clever ways to kill these guys.
Oh, sure.
Hey, can I give you a suggestion?
Yeah.
You could have them run and their ankles could snap off.
Have them do a half K marathon for breast cancer.
I'm wearing pink.
I want you to give me a particular method of offing a zombie that you're very proud of, that you came up
well,
with.
Well, there's one in the new film where there's a guy that's trapped by a zombie in the boiler room of a ferry boat, and he has no weapon. And so he grabs a fire extinguisher and taunts the zombie with the nozzle of the fire extinguisher, and the zombie, being a zombie, bites on it. And he fills him with foam, and the foam comes out of every orifice in the zombie's head.
There you go.
Yeah. Whoa.
Listen to that happy laugh, ladies and gentlemen. Well, George Romero, we're delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game that today we're going to call
Bippity Boppity Brains.
Okay.
You're known, of course, for making these movies about zombies and brains exploding and dismemberment and other cheery topics, so we thought we'd ask you about nicer, cuddlier Disney movies.
Okay.
Answer two of these questions correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is director George Romero playing for?
George is playing for Mar Brant Piper of Sun City, Arizona.
All right, here's your first question.
Okay.
Here we go. Disney actually had to recall the videotape release of its 1977 movie, The Rescuers. All the videotapes had to be brought back in and gotten rid of. Why? Was it A, one of the cartoon mice is named OJ in a scene brandishing a knife for comic purposes? B, the mice characters get dizzy after sniffing cheese fumes and people thought it was a pro-drug message? Or C, there's a real topless woman in the background of one of the shots?
Wow. I guess I'll go with the topless woman.
The topless woman.
Yeah.
Right. Some wag, nobody knows who, inserted a single picture in a frame of the movie of a topless woman in a window behind the main mice characters. And this was in the original 1977 theatrical release. But nobody noticed it until it went out on videotape and people at home could sort of freeze frame it and somebody found it. So they had to recall all the movies.
Wow. So
were there subliminal reactions to this?
Yeah, yeah. It's all the little children watching it somehow felt cheap all of a sudden and didn't know why.
Or hungry for milk.
Or something. All right, very good. One for one. Here's your next question. There's one Disney movie that is tainted by scandal to this day. What is it? Was it A, Where the Toys Come From, in which toys made in Asia are discriminated against by the others? B, White Wilderness, a nature documentary in which filmmakers herded innocent lemmings off a cliff to get the shot? Or C, Victory Through Air Power, a World War II documentary which plays cheery music over footage of actual bombings?
Oh, boy. I'll go with the lemmings.
You're going to go with the lemmings?
Yeah, White Wilderness.
You're right. That's the answer. Clearly, you've worked with lemmings. They're hard. Here's the thing. Despite what you've heard, lemmings don't actually throw themselves off cliffs. They just don't do it. And, of course, the Disney filmmakers really needed them to throw themselves off the cliffs. So they were kind of urged.
What, do they make them break up with their lemming girlfriend?
Exactly. They faked stock portfolios and showed it to the lemmings. No.
There's some emo music.
All right. Here's your last question. Now, not all Disney films are light romps involving anthropomorphic rodents or mermaids. Which of these was an actual Disney title? A, The Story of Menstruation. B, He's Not Your Uncle, He's Your Dad. Or C, The Miracle of Nylon.
Oh, boy. I guess I don't know. I guess Fred Rogers would have done a movie about menstruation, so I'll pick that.
You're right, The Story of Menstruation. It was an educational film. It's an educational film, 10 minutes long. It was sponsored by Kotex back in the 40s. What's interesting is the title, The Story of Menstruation, is like how it was invented.
Do they show the factory?
I guess so. And that like chipper 1940s style, like the music, bum, 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 and all the workers are going into the menstruation. Never mind.
I'm thinking more like it's a story. It's not like a cliffhanger, is it? Like, how does it end?
Carl, how did George Romero do in our quiz?
George did very well, Peter. 3 correct answers, so George wins for Mar Brant Piper.
Well done.
All right.
George Romero is the man behind the classic horror films Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and others. His latest is Survival of the Dead. He is appearing this weekend in Stars Inside, Zombie Mania. George Romero, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
What a pleasure
thank
to have you.
You.
All. Bye-bye.
Zombie, oh zombie,
zombie, zombie,
zombie, not gonna go unless you tell him to go.
Zombie,
not gonna stop unless you tell him to stop.
Zombie,
not gonna turn unless you tell him to turn.
In just a minute, Carl gives in to his deepest rhymal urges in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, though, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Julia, there was anger and concern at the United Nations headquarters in New York City after a major security breach allowed WHO access to secured areas at the UN.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Who let that man in here? Why is he rearranging the sign in that funny way? No, I'll give you a hint. He distracted security guards by tossing them a bucket of extra crispy.
Extra crispy?
Yes.
It's got to be the colonel. The colonel?
It's the colonel, yes. Amy just poached it.
Oh,
the Colonel Sanders.
No. Colonel Sanders.
Colonel Sanders.
He's dead.
He's dead.
But apparently...
Unfair question.
UN personnel are not aware of this. Kentucky Fried Chicken, KFC, came up with a crazy scheme to promote its new grilled chicken. They sneak a guy dressed as Colonel Sanders into the UN. They have him meet important people. They get his, he gets his picture taken at the UN podium. Here's the thing. It worked. You know, he's a colonel. They thought he engineered a coup somewhere. Was running Greece, maybe. I don't know.
But they must have thought... They thought it would work. Otherwise, it would be...
Well, I know. I don't think they thought it would get this far. The colonel got all the way to meeting General Assembly President Ali Trekkie of Libya before he was finally caught.
Oh,
it's the worst fast food-related scandal at the UN since they seated the Burger King on the Security Council.
And to describe the Hamburglar's reign of terror as anything other than a kleptocracy...
I know.
Patently false.
And can you imagine the poor guy who had to do the translation for the grimace? Like, I just don't understand it. He seems hungry, though. Luke, these days, ostentatious wealth out. But a fancy British design company has released a luxury bedding line more in line with today's downmarket aesthetic. It's inspired by what group of Americans?
Homeless people?
Yes, indeed. How did you know?
I tried to think of the bed I would least like to sleep in, and I just thought of under the freeway.
Pretty much that's the aesthetic.
Bed.
Have you ever seen one of these guys, poor man or woman, sleeping in the sidewalk covered by a big sheet of cardboard, and you said to yourself, hey, I like your look? Well, for about $100, you can buy a flat sheet from this company. It's printed to look like a sidewalk. And you can also get a duvet cover and pillowcases that look like duct-taped cardboard boxes. It's generated some criticism for its insensitivity. On the other hand, it's on back order, so people like it. Now, about 30% of the profits benefit a charity that helps the homeless. That means 70% of the proceeds go to people who have no souls. Speaking of zombies, one homeless man interviewed about the cardboard box duvet cover responded, quote, "What the hell is a duvet cover?"
It took me getting married before I realized there's a top sheet.
I know.
I mean, honestly, really? I was like, there's a blanket. I've put some towels down. I'm, like, not far off from that guy under the bridge. It's getting real on this. Wait, don't tell me.
Julia, it has recently come to light that at the Washington Redskins FedEx Field, you can buy... That's never happened before. I've never had a panelist throw herself in front of the question yelling, no!
She's really, you're really putting the system on trial.
She did it in slow motion, too.
That's great.
Wow.
Go ahead.
It's amazing. It has recently come to light that at the Washington Redskins FedEx Field at their stadium where they play, you can buy beer where?
In the bathroom.
Exactly right. You got it.
She just tapped into her own personal dream.
There you are.
And it happened to be true.
At Washington's FedEx Field, men can now purchase their next beer while they're saying goodbye to the last one. Fan videos show beer vendors staking out the line for the urinals in the restroom. As unsanitary as it may seem, it's a brilliant business plan because you know your customers are coming back to you. It's like selling American cars next to the scrap heap. FedEx Field says it will stop the practice, and instead they'll institute a new service in which you can pay to have your beer poured directly down the toilet, saving you the time and trouble of bringing it there yourself.
You know, it's when they put the urinal cake right in the beer. They just, you know, cut out the...
They do that only for wheat beers, though. Yeah. It's a tradition.
You can dunk that like a cookie.
Don't be gross.
Could be holding you tonight. Could quit doing wrong and start doing right. You don't care about what I think. Think I'll just stay here and drink.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can always send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and you can check out our brand new blog. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, Peter, this is Bill Burton calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Hey, we love Chapel Hill. How are things there? You got some Tar Heels here?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Things are going well here.
Well, what do you do there?
I'm taking a break from my teaching career, and I'm doing some graduate work at UNC Chapel Hill.
And what are you studying?
Information science.
Information science. What,
yes.
What exactly is information science?
I was hoping you wouldn't ask me this question.
I know.
I'm still trying to figure it out myself.
And
well, you could always Google it.
There you are.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Good.
Well, welcome to the show, Bill. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to go?
Yes, I'm ready.
Here is your first limerick.
Motivational lies your own tush. With that verbiage, he gave me a push. He mangles his speech, but he's got lots to teach. He's my guru, ex-president
Bush.
Yes. That's right. Former President Bush made his debut as a motivational speaker this last week, joining a number of dignitaries on stage at the Get Motivated seminar in Fort Worth, Texas. One seminar goer said that when Bush misspoke, it sounded, quote, incompetent if you were president. But here it can be inspiring. It makes him seem like a regular guy, no better than me, unquote. So really, the motivational message was, if this clown can be president, nothing's going to keep me from being salesman of the month. All right, very good. Here's your next limerick.
To lipids, my brain might succumb. They make synapses slower and numb. I think fatty foods are good for my moods, but my brain suffers. They make me
dumb.
Right, it is official. That hamburger you just ate, it's going to make you stupid and fat. According to researchers at Oxford University in Britain, high-fat diets cloud your brain, make you feel lazy and sluggish. Rats who were put on high-fat diets were only able to run 50% as far on a treadmill. They began making mistakes in the maze sooner and were often seen lying around the cage playing Guitar Hero and asking other rats to pull their fingers. Here is your last limerick.
In Yosemite, we had a scare when our minivan's horn wouldn't blare. A big ursine beast thought our car was a feast. It's a pantry on wheels for
a bear.
Right! Bears at Yosemite National Park in California may not subscribe to car and driver, but they know what they like, and what they like is minivans. According to a study in the Journal of Mammalogy, given a choice of any car in a parking lot, bears tend to choose minivans. Why? Well, since they tend to be full of crumbled Cheerios, stray Cheetos, and half-filled juice boxes, bears look at them like jumbo-sized metal Lunchables. And they just tear them right open and snack.
I believe it. That's all I've got to say.
All the parents listening are like, yep.
Yeah.
We're lucky we haven't been attacked by a bear
today. And also they're roomy. You know, if you're a bear and you need to get in,
right?
You know, it's a good car for a bear.
I'm terrified of bears because my parents aren't readers. Most of the books we had growing up were things that were in fill-the-bag sales at various Catholic church garage sales. So we had a lot of, like, Reader's Digest, large print.
Yeah.
And there's this column called Drama in Real Life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's divided into two categories, people who survive plane crashes and people who are attacked by bears, and are literally skinned. All of their skin is taken off, and they carry their skin out like an overcoat. And then they survive, and then they write about it.
Yeah.
Pick up any Reader's Digest from the 1980s.
And they can't even run out because then their ankles would break.
That's right. Right.
Carl, how did Bill do in our quiz?
Bill wins our prize, Peter. He had 3 correct answers.
Well done, Bill. Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you. Bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Julia Sweeney and Amy Dickinson each has 3 points. Luke Burbank has 2.
Ooh. Okay. So, Luke, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. In a sign their feud may be ending, White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs met with an executive from blank on Wednesday.
Fox News.
Right. In a speech on Thursday, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said Iran was ready to cooperate with the West on its blank program.
Nuclear.
Right. Senators from New York and Pennsylvania made a traditional cheesecake or cheese steak bet at the start of the blank.
World Series.
Right. This is it. The documentary showing the final rehearsals of blank grossed $2.2 million on its opening night.
Michael Jackson.
Right. Shriners in Atlanta, Georgia are being forced to rethink future parades now that burglars have stolen their blank.
Float?
No, their fleet of miniature cars. In a move sure to improve safety on the roadways, Chrysler announced this week that they'll provide up to 20 channels of blank in future vehicles.
It can't be television.
It is. The full frontal shots in his upcoming Playgirl spread will be, quote, tastefully done, according to blank.
Levi Johnson.
Yes. After one shoe went missing from a shop in Belgium, police immediately suspected the blank seen in the vicinity.
I don't want to do this, but the one-legged man.
Indeed. It may be profiling, but heck, it worked. Police quickly arrested the one-legged man who was found with the one stolen shoe in his possession. Carl, how did Luke do in our quiz?
Had a great round, Peter. 7 correct answers, 14 Ooh. More points. Luke now has 16 points and the lead.
Well done.
Oh.
We have flipped a coin. Julia has elected to go next. So here we go, Julia. Fill in the blank. Kathleen Sebelius acknowledged that vaccinations against blank have been, quote, a little bumpy but should improve.
Swine flu.
Right, H1N1. The mother in the blank incident admitted to police that it was, in fact, a hoax.
The balloon?
The balloon boy, yes. Boy. After a rod snapped, sending chunks of concrete into traffic, the blank in San Francisco was closed once again for repairs.
Oh, the bridge. A bridge whose name has gone out of my head. The Golden Gate
Bridge. No, the other one. The Bay Bridge. On Thursday, NASA launched a rocket that it is planning to someday send on missions to blank.
The moon?
No, to Mars. A Japanese company is now selling glasses that will help video game players by blanking them.
Blinding them?
No. That'll cure them from the habit. No, by reminding them to blink.
Oh.
To raise breast cancer awareness, the White House was decorated this week with a giant blank.
A pink ribbon?
Right. Calling them morally reprehensible, Director Paul Haggis severed ties with the Church of Blank after 35 years of ministry.
Scientology! I can't get over that story.
It's a good one. Police in Iowa had an easy time identifying a pair of burglars because to disguise themselves, they had covered their faces with blank.
Halloween masks.
No, with permanent marker. The Iowa men had a low-budget idea to disguise themselves for their break-in attempt, scribble all over their faces with a permanent marker. But as great as that idea sounds, there's one problem. It's permanent. Experts say that with luck, the marker will wash off by the time the pair gets out of jail. Carl, how did Julia Sweeney do in our quiz?
Julia had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 11 points, but Luke Burbank still has the lead with 16.
All right. So how many, then, does Amy need to take it away from Luke and win this game?
7 correct answers.
7 correct answers.
It can't be done.
But it can. Here we go, Amy. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. The U.S. economy grew 3.5% in the third quarter, leading many analysts to say the blank is over.
Recession.
Right. According to a book by President Obama's campaign manager, Obama did not choose Hillary Clinton for the VP spot because of blank.
There'd be too many people in bed. Because of Bill.
Yes, because of Bill. In a phone interview with British television, a British man told how he and his wife were taken captive when his yacht was boarded by blank.
Pirates.
Right. In an effort to move to a clean energy economy, President Obama unveiled an $8 billion plan to modernize the U.S. blank.
Clean energy, it was the military.
No, the power grid. In an attempt to stop drunken partiers from relieving themselves on his shop front, a store owner in Ireland is blanking.
Electrifying it.
Yes. In his new autobiography, tennis pro blank admits to using crystal meth 12 years ago.
Andre Agassi.
Right. A woman was described as a nice lady overcome with Phillies fever after she was arrested trying to exchange sex for blank.
Tickets?
Tickets to?
The World Series?
Yes, indeed. A politician in Ireland's governing party is recommending that anxious drivers blank before getting behind the wheel.
have a drinky.
Exactly.
No.
Just one. Or two. Ireland is in the midst of a debate on blood alcohol limits for drivers, so politician Matty McGrath chimed in with his opinion that a drink could, in fact, help drivers relax. He said, quote, "People say that after one drink it lessens your concentration. I don't accept that." McGrath then put a lampshade on his head, said goodnight to a coat rack, and walked into a closet. Carl, did Amy do well enough to win?
Well, she needed 7 correct answers, Peter, and she had 7.
Whoa!
So, with 17 points, Amy Dickinson is this week's champion.
Amazing.
I should not have had that one beer right before the lightning round.
Be like really relaxed.
If I had that to do over again.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists, now that President Obama has played golf with the fairer sex, how he will next show he's inclusive toward women. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world and the connections between them. The Economist on newsstands, in bookstores and at economist.com. The George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how to Tomorrow Moves. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, how else will President Obama show that he is all about the ladies? Amy Dickinson.
In solidarity to the women on the staff, President Obama is going to adjust his own hormonal cycle so they will all menstruate at the same time.
Julia Sweeney.
He's going to wear falsies and a push-up bra twice a week to work, and he's also willing to wear a long-haired wig and use a high-pitched tone when he speaks.
That's very nice of him. Luke Burbank.
I don't want to spoil next week's White House video night, but the chances that Stella will be getting her groove back are extremely high.
And if President Obama does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Luke Burbank, Julia Sweeney, and Amy Dickinson. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week from Pasadena, California. This is NPR, National Public Radio.